Hello, rap fans. It's Richard Herring here. Thank you for listening to my podcasts, powered by Acast Plus. Do tell your friends if you think they might enjoy them too. And do come and see me on tour in my show, Can I Have My Ball Back? Go to richardherring.com/ballback/tour for all tour dates, going to lots of places in the UK. Some extra gigs added in London at the Leicester Square Theatre and the Bloomsbury Theatre. The Leicester Square Theatre first gig is very nearly sold out, so do rush along to those shows, London, if you want to come along. Some of the shows selling fantastically well, some of them selling pretty badly. Hello, Swindon. Do you know I'm coming to your town? Please buy some tickets. And I do have to give a trigger warning. I've done the show only a few times and 6 men have passed out. After the bit where I explain what happens to you during an operation for testicular cancer. So, are you man enough to handle my balls? Only come if you are, have lots of balls and are not scared of balls. There is some mild testicle trauma involved in this story of testicular cancer. It's mainly funny, though, and if you don't come, that means you're scared to come, and I'm going to judge you, so... It's like going on a fairground ride, so do come along. It's going to be very exciting to see if you make it through. I'll give you a badge if you make it through unscathed. Anyway, come and see the tour, richardherring.com for all that news. Some great Rahalastapas coming up, I have to tell you, in the next few weeks. The tour was a lot of fun. Thanks very much to everyone who came. Sit back, relax, and enjoy my stupid fucking podcast.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. Please welcome a man whose nose is still red from last week. But you can't hear that on the audio, thank goodness. It's Richard Herring! You're much better than last week's audience. They were terrible. Those guys were awful. So, welcome to the show. This is Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. But I was at a meeting of all the ex-leaders of UKIP the other day, and they all call it Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. So it's yeah. What a week it's been. Whew. All the stuff that's been going on, eh? Let's have a look in the audience, see who we've got in the audience. We've got a gentleman here, he's got a work shirt on, but he's got his sleeves rolled up because he's out to have some fun on a Monday night. What's your name, sir?
Sven.
Sam. Okay, that's not as exciting. What do you do for a living, Sam? IT? Accountant. Okay, quite a few accounts. It's going up. It's kind of marking it today. Yeah, there's no one, no nuclear physicist. What is the best number? In Europe? 7?
Yeah.
Good choice. What about you, sir? Hello, what's your name?
I'm Michael.
You're Michael. Are you a metal detector? No, it's not. That's a thing, isn't it? It's not what they're called. What do you do for a living, Michael? You're a student. What do you study?
Science.
It can't just be science. It must be more than so. What's your speciality? You've got a beard, man. You're not like 13 years old studying science. You're studying something specific.
I will go with botany.
It's botany?
Yeah.
Yeah. What is the best of the plants in the Southern Pacific region? Palm trees. I love the way he did it. He went, palm trees. That's a definitive answer. That was part of your module for your final degree. And
You've got a 2-2 on that bit, so well done, Michael. Thanks for coming along. Do you like the work of Charles Darwin? It's good when he went all around the Galapagos Islands, wasn't it? That was good. And we worked out, didn't he, that, about evolution and stuff. You must have loved that when that happened. Okay, I'm going to move on. I'm sure I had something to talk about, but let's not worry about it. Let's introduce this week's guests. They are probably best known. One of them is best known for her appearance on Dan Nightingale's In the House podcast. And one of them is best known for her appearance on Gary Delaney's Panel Beaters. And I don't need to tell you which way round that is. It's Kiri Pritchard-McLean and Rachel Fairbairn, ladies and gentlemen. Come in. Kiri, Rachel, sit down. Thanks for coming along.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
How are you doing?
Yeah, we're all right, aren't we?
Yeah.
Look at that, she didn't touch the floor.
It's adorable. You're like you're in a grotto.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't either. Doesn't matter.
You can sit a bit quite nearer the front if you like, and then your feet. I'm quite small as well. I noticed on your podcast you both like tall men.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, we do.
I feel very affronted.
Do you know, you're the perfect size, though. When they advertise sofas, they deliberately get sort of little people, so the sofas look bigger. That's true. Okay. In adverts, they have tight... So you two would be an absolute shoo-in for a sofa advert.
Oh,
so
brilliant.
If it doesn't pan out, mate...
Yeah, that's good to know.
DFS.
I'll look out for it. So, well, look, you're both... I know you both from the All Killer, No Filler podcast, which we'll talk about first. Some fans in.
Hi, guys.
Some Thank fans you. Of murder nice. In tonight.
Yeah, keep your eye on them.
Which is... It's interesting that I was aware of both of you before, but this is the first kind of thing that I've really heard a lot of you in, and it's interesting that, A, that can happen now, that the podcasts are working in that way, that people are coming to new comedians in this way. But also, it's quite a bold decision to make a podcast about serial killers.
I don't think it is. In fact, it was Dan Nightingale who said to me, he referred to our podcast as being niche, and I was like, bitch, please. Because I think is amazing about podcasts is that people, you just make content, and then the world has decided what they want to know about.
Yeah.
And principally, it's football, feminism, and murder. So, like, one day we're going to coalesce and make something about all of them. But, like, yeah, we just started, we had an interest in, I guess, true crime, broadly speaking.
Yeah.
And then we started years ago doing this podcast.
Which we didn't think anyone would listen to at first. And then, as it started to take off, we're still shocked at how... Well, even though there's a lot of people interested in true crime, we are still a bit like, oh, this is amazing. Like, so many people listen to it.
I mean, you're right, there are lots of true crime things, but they're quite serious and they're a bit worthy and often a bit like... And a lot of those true crime things are just kind of trying to lead you on to listen to the next one, and you go, oh, will we find out the answer? And you get to the end of them, they go, they're still in prison. Well, so to decide to go straight in and refer to this. You don't want to be laughing at the idea of people being murdered, and you're not laughing at the victims. But to decide to do that as your first thing, I think, or is it the first podcast, if it was your first podcast, to decide to do a comedy about serial killers is quite bold, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I guess we didn't have careers to fuck back then. And thanks to the podcast, we've actually sort of got one now, ironically. But yeah, I guess, one of my fears, fingers crossed it happens, is that the Daily Mail would get hold of us and be sort of fake outraged.
Yeah.
Because, we could do with the PR. But I think people could, if they wanted to, take stuff out of context. And
yeah.
I think when people, we were chatting about this at dinner just then, that some people were like, well, I think it's distasteful. I'm like, well, you definitely haven't listened then, because we always try and stay on the right side of things. And I kind of think, do you think it's that sort of natural to be interested in this stuff?
I think so. I don't know. Well, having said that, we've always been interested in macabre things and dark things. And I think a lot of comics do tend to be interested in sort of the darker side of life.
Definitely.
And I don't know, I think it's a natural thing for a human who's well-behaved and decent, us, to be interested in something that's so far removed from something you would do. So really, if you're not interested in it, there's something wrong with you.
Yeah.
Is what Yeah, if you think we're distasteful, actually, yeah. You're the weirdos. So.
Well, I think, but the great thing about podcasts, and I discovered this very early on with the first one I did with Andrew Collins, is, you know, people don't have to listen to it, right? And so it's not like a radio show where it might be going to someone's house. You make a decision to listen to it.
Yep.
So if you're not going to listen to something, if you'd have to want to be offended to listen to something about murder, if you thought the idea of talking about serial killers in an occasionally lighthearted way is sick. But I think that's. I wonder if, you know, I think most people are interested in crime and murders, partly out of a level of you think about the worst thing that could possibly happen, and it's a way of dealing with the awful side of the world. But I was wondering whether the comedy aspect of it, in a way, serial killers are sort of the comedians of the serious world. In that they behave really inappropriately, right? So is that part of...
Yeah, they barely make a living out of it.
They disobey the rules of society.
But
also because they're behaving in such a way that is so alien to most people that it sort of is... There's a very dark humour to it because you're not meant to kill lots of people and wear their heads as hats.
I mean, you're making that statement, not us.
So you know, there's a sort of comedy to it that's a twisted comedy. If you see what I mean, that's gone so far it's not funny, You know what I'm trying to say?
No, actually, I'm going to distance myself from this.
I was hoping you'd take that. she's going to come up with something.
Well, no. I sort of think I know what you're getting at. So like, someone who's not a serial killer, but like got. Was one of the things that I got was really interested in was Ed Gein, and the fucking mad shit he used to do with the bodies that he exhumed. Like, he made belts from nipples, and he made like a pull cord for a lampshade with a pair of lips on the end, which is just a lovely flourish. and soup bowls made out of like skulls, and it was like hobby craft, but obviously very like macabre. I just think there's something fucking. Oh,
he's a one man Etsy. That's what he was.
Yeah, and he had a lampshade made out of a face, and like all this is awful, but also it's funny, isn't it? If that was his tiger, we'd all have it. Like.
But it's comedy gone wrong in a very serious way. But do you think, I've always thought, I'm surprised, and then maybe there is one, but I'm surprised there hasn't been a comedian serial killer, or has there been one?
Oh, someone told me, a comedian that you know, told me, Stuart Lee, told me, you do know him, that told me that there was one in America that was caught, and because it is a great, we've talked about this before, it's a great lifestyle because you travel from city to city, you're never there very long, no one fucking cares that you are, so like it's the perfect way to get away with loads of murders, and there was one in America who killed about 6 people.
And also a lot of, I won't say a lot, some comedians do have the same personality aspects as serial killers, sort of self-centred, very sort of focused, not really interested what other people think about them.
Tricky relationships with their mothers.
Obviously not ours. Just other comedians.
But comedians would be the serial killers that write to the papers going, you still haven't got me yet. Like, they'd be those ones.
We have discussed that, though, haven't we? Who on the circuit would be a serial killer?
We think at any point there's 6 comedians on the circuit, like on the verge of going on a spree, but they're not organised enough.
I mean, it might come up.
Yeah.
At some point.
I mean, I hope so.
Yeah.
Imagine
great
the
you.
Listening figures then.
Well, if one of them's you, then that would be it.
That's the other thing that we talk about. If one of us gets off, like that, the other one's going to do really well selling their story.
Yeah,
it'll be her as well.
I'd be on This Morning like that. I mean, it'd be really sad if something happened to Kiri. She's my friend, and I care very much about her. But if something did happen to you, it'd be like, oh, hi, Holly and Philip. Yeah, I mean, it's a really terrible thing that happened. I've got a book coming out.
Why are you talking to him like you want to fuck him? I mean, if I was going to have a go on any breakfast team, it would be Holly and Phil. I don't think that's controversial, is it? Yes! Thank you. I'd have a go on Holly, I'd make Phil watch. That's where I am with things. Well,
what's the other option? Piers Morgan and...
Eamon Holmes and his wife. Someone's been to that party.
Well, what's nice, I think, about the podcast, we'll move on to other stuff as well, but is that you get a lot of the personality of the both of you. So, like, although, you know, it is about each week you'll look at the life of a serial killer, but you'll fly off at tangents and talk about, you know, what kind of guys you fancy and, you know, what you've been up to and... You know, we learn a lot about you two through it.
A little bit too much sometimes.
You talk about your sister, the one I was listening to, was very strange fantasies about your sister.
Well, then I feel like there needs to be some story for that.
It was the one where you were speculating what she would do if she was the pilot in the plane.
Oh, yes. Yeah. When she breaks into the cockpit.
Yeah.
Doubt it.
Yeah.
So, there we go. You can tell who's listening to it just from that. Yeah.
But, you know, but then again, though, they because it feels very improvised, whilst you've obviously researched each subject, but then you'll just chat about it and chuck stuff in and you're improvising jokes around it and then we find out about you. So have you found, you've been doing live gigs with it and they've been doing very well and lots of people have been coming to see them.
It's been
brilliant.
And so people kind of know about, as much about you as they do about...
They know too much about
me. They do know too much about me. I think as well, it's really strange because sometimes people talk to you afterwards, which is lovely, and they'll talk to you about something that you've said, and you're like, oh, I don't remember any of that. Did I actually say that, and why did I say it? We used to record it in my spare room in Manchester, and then we record it, because I live in London now, I know. And we record it whenever we can, don't we?
Yeah.
But because we're just chatting to each other as friends, we do sort of say things sometimes and we'll sort of go to edit it and we'll think, oh, should we keep that in?
Often as well I drift off when I'm editing it, so I'm like, I think that's fine. So like I'll sort of make sure the end and the beginning's all right and then I've not really listened to it in the middle. And then someone will come and tell you like, oh, by the way, you should beep out your parents' phone number that you said out loud on the podcast.
That was my error, that one, wasn't it? Yeah, that was mine.
Yeah. I went, mate, can you turn my parents' home line down, please? because we do... It is, the other thing is, I think maybe I'm speaking out of turn, but what people like about it is like a genuine female friendship, like that is just, this is what we would talk about whether there was a recorder on or not. And like so often when you see any kind of portrayal of women, like they're in competition with each other or they're, you know, like, you know, just talking about guys, not that we don't talk about that, fair old whack. But, you know, it is just like, I think lots of women like it because they're like, oh, this is what I sound like when I talk with my girlfriends. Because that's the mad thing is when we do live shows and meet them afterwards, nearly everyone we meet are like, well, I'd just be mates with you. I mean, there's the odd fucking oddball, but like, generally, they're like, oh, these are people we'd be mates with. So I think it's people sort of feel like they're hanging out.
Yeah.
Which is a really nice thing.
Yeah. Well, I think that is how podcasts, more than radio, which it used to be radio was that medium where people felt they were.
Yeah.
But I think it's even more intimate and you know, in terms of you do really get to the heart of people because I think it's, you know, podcasts are generally more off the cuff.
Definitely.
I am talking now. If this had been prepared, what I was saying now, it would be better than this. but that's the point, you know. So people, you know, and you can't hide. You know, when you've done 40 or 50 of these things, you can't hide. You can't really be hiding behind a persona, you know. Even if you were, some of it's going to come out, you know.
Definitely.
The real you.
Persona's slipped. If there ever was one. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, definitely.
Because I don't know how you would even switch that. That's why the live shows are really fun and easy, because you just come on stage and you're more so than stand-up, that like I haven't reached that bit quite with my stand-up. I'm still a version of myself. With the podcast, I'm just myself.
I think the one thing I've, from doing this podcast for so long, I think it has changed my stand-up slightly, and I think I'm definitely, I'd say 90% myself, absolutely myself, on stage now. Whereas before, I used to be quite deadpan and, I don't know, quite awkward. I think from sort of doing this for so long and doing live shows, I think I've been more myself on stage, really. It's quite weird, actually. Yeah.
But I think, you know, that's when I started a long, long time ago, you know, if you wanted to do a show where you were chatting with somebody, you had to get a radio show, or you know, or just do it on a tape and send it to
Radio's
your friends.
Dead.
But yeah,
and I said that as someone who loves it.
Yeah,
but like, oh, I mean, you couldn't put. We'd never get like. I love Radio 4, but there's absolutely no way they're going to put two women with regional accents on talking about murder and cocks. There's just no way they're going
to
do it.
Then, you know, but also you don't want, you know, it's good to be doing something that isn't trying to get like a radio show. It's good to be doing something. This is, you're clearly doing something that's an end in itself. You want to do this show and you're doing this show.
Yep.
And then people get to know you. But I think also you get to do loads of it, and you wouldn't, even if it was a radio show, you might get six a year and then six the next year. Mm-hmm. And then they might go, oh, we've had enough. You know, but to be able to do 40 or 50 or as many as you want, this is 172 of these.
Ooh.
You know, it's probably enough, isn't it? No, so David says we have to do more. And you know, when you do, you find life in something. You know, there's always places to go with it. You know, and you're going to get better at what you're doing. So it's really if you haven't listened to the podcast, please do listen to this podcast. And it puts a complete lie to that idea that female stand-ups will talk about this and this and this. I don't even want to go into those stupid. Mm-hmm. But you don't. It's not what people whose opinion we shouldn't even be contemplating think.
Good that you brought it up and made it again.
Yeah,
though.
Yeah. Good. Yeah. But you didn't. You were put together by. You hadn't met each other. Is that true? And people just said you two should get together and do something.
We hadn't met because. I mean, it's getting better, but it was quite rare to have two women on the same bill in comedy.
Yeah.
So we didn't really cross paths. And people kept saying to us, oh, you should meet Kiri, you should meet Rachel. At first I was a bit like, oh yeah, who's this thinking she knows more about serial killers than me?
Yeah, I was like that. And I knew that you were fit as well. I was like, she sounds like a cunt.
And then we discovered that we actually lived across the road from each other.
Yeah. Easier to kill in one night.
Which is so northern, isn't it?
Yeah.
And we did actually record one episode of the podcast, but it was frankly bizarre. Do you remember it? Do you remember? It's probably for the best.
Was it on like my phone and it, we never used
it? Oh, we never used it. It was me rambling on about a local radio DJ. It was that shit. And we never did it. And then once we worked out how we were going to structure it, and we did the first one. But when we met, we weren't friends.
No, you can tell that from the first.
Yeah,
first one definitely, and then the second one gets better. That there's two people who don't really know each other yet.
Yeah.
Right. So like, whereas now I think there's no conversation that we wouldn't have at all. Some I wish I could take back and not hear again. But like, yeah, but I think that first
I know
one
exactly
can tell
what
that
you're
don't.
Referring to.
I think in the beginning you can tell that we don't really know each other, and that's it's a bit sort of like, so I guess it's a bit stilted, whereas I think now it's just a friends having a chat.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it was, we kind of, but people kept going, oh, you should meet so-and-so, because obviously we were bringing up serial killers in green rooms behind gigs, which is such a fucking bold move to do, like, 3 years into comedy. But, yeah, I think people kept being like, you need to meet her, which is really nice.
Yep.
Yeah. And so, look, who are your, I mean, it's sort of weird to talk about favourites.
Top
who,
three?
Top three.
Top three. Well, you said backstage that you liked them when you were growing up.
I did. I used to read, and weirdly, I read the, which you talked about, the Fred West book.
Happy Like Murderers.
Yeah. And I read it when I was on my own, I went on a holiday on my own to Mexico.
Everything about this but the location is fucking bleak, man.
Yeah, and I was reading that book on my own.
Oh.
And it kind of just, and it really sort of freaked me. It is a brilliant book.
Yeah.
But brilliant. It's also just, it's too, I just thought, what am I doing?
Yeah.
It's not like I lost interest in it, but I just sort of didn't. I never read any of the books again after that. But I did read quite a few of those. I think Dennis Nielsen, I was always, and Jeffrey Dahmer, I think you guys are quite interested in those two.
Yeah.
They're kind of fascinating characters. And again, there's sort of some dark comedy in there between.
Oh, definitely.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, he was always cracking jokes, Nielsen, wasn't he? Like, you know, trying.
It was Dharma that was.
Dharma was the one who used to play the Room for Laughs.
Yeah.
Nielsen was a good old trade unionist, which are invariably humourless. Although I am a big fan of a union. But weird, funny stuff happens. And, like, this is the thing, is like, we've always been like, you never laugh at the victims. Because that's it's just rules of comedy. You don't punch down.
Yeah.
So, like, that murdered sex worker's already been through enough. They don't need me trying to make a pun on their name. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just horrible.
Yeah.
But there's loads of funny stuff that happens because, for a start, the police are fucking inept. Yeah. So there's never, ever a case where they don't drop a bollock or do something just like absolutely mad decision gets made or someone gives some bonkers statement.
Yeah, or just totally disregard something that's really important.
Yeah.
Especially, well, I guess for someone to get somebody, a serial killer, you've got to kill four or five people, is it? Three or four or five people?
You say three.
With a cooling off period in between.
Yeah.
We're not sticklers for the rules, but you know.
You know, the police have to be slightly incompetent to allow it to go that far, really.
Yeah,
we have to be very good at it.
I've got a theory that if there was a serial killer who murdered policemen, they wouldn't make it to being a serial killer, because I think that they would close ranks and find them. But what I find really fascinating about true crime and serial killers in particular is every single one will tell you something about the world that they occupy. So how they get away with things always tells you about the world. So... Colin Ireland and Dennis Nielsen, they killed gay guys in a time when no one cared about the gay community. Yeah. So Colin Ireland did it, and this was at the time that, like, the Royal Vauxhall Tavern was being raided by police wearing rubber gloves and saying horrible things about AIDS. So they just kept dismissing it as gay sex games gone wrong.
Yeah.
So it just tells you about the world lives in.
Same with Dharma, that as well.
Yeah.
Because the police actually found him with one of his victims.
It was
an underage boy, and they actually didn't they use the phrase, "Oh, we just thought it was gay stuff."
Yeah,
and he ended up murdering him when
they took
had an
him back to his.
Yeah, they took him back when they had an opportunity to save him. So it does. It shows you a lot of the issues around at the particular time that, like Peter Sutcliffe as well.
Yeah,
the sort of issues around the way sex workers were treated and how sort of women were thought of. It's really sort of interesting and depressing.
Yeah, really depressing.
Sort of the issues that it sort of brings up, really.
Because when Peter Sutcliffe was obviously killing sex workers,
yeah.
And then the first time he killed someone who wasn't, everyone's like, we've got to find this monster. And it's like, for about four girls ago.
Yeah.
But like, it's just that people don't, you find out who the world doesn't give a shit about and what the world prioritizes. So there's even things like the Green River Killer killed absolutely loads of women over, like, decades, and you don't really know about him because he was discovered very close to 9/11. So, like, nothing was really in the news cycle. So, like, there's this huge, huge, massive serial killer in America that people haven't really heard of, because it there was bigger stuff going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah, I just think it's like really, really interesting. It tells you a lot about history.
Yeah. No, that's true. That is true. Yeah. It's terrifying. Well, let's talk about you. Terrifying.
It feels like all the dates I've been on where I just like talk non-stop and then they go, it's terrifying. That Uber surge has gone down, so I'm just going to order it now.
And I'm usually sat in the middle.
Chaperoning.
I'm sure we'll come back to serial killers because it is interesting why you're fascinated by it and what, you know, and when it's interesting that it scared me, I think, being interested in it. But it scared me too much, and so it sort of scared me off a little bit. You know, that's kind of... But that's sort of what it... You're pushing yourself by being interested in it. But it's true. You know, the fact it's true as well. It gives it a sort of added, you know, both negative and positive aspect, I suppose. It is fascinating that people have this interest. Let's talk a little bit about both of you and separately and what you've done separately before you got together. I mean, you've both been doing stand-up. You worked with, Kiri, you worked with Mentoring with Vulnerable Kids, which you just did a show about. Is that right?
Yeah. What a laugh riot. So where you used to live, but we live in a very... We live by Bird and Manning's. Well, you don't anymore. You fucked off, aren't you?
I'll be back.
Yeah,
I'll be
back. So will.
Yeah.
The booze is too dear down here. So we live really close to Bernard Manning's Embassy Club, like about two streets away. So I started volunteering a while ago in the area. And then, my show last year was about working with a young girl and sort of everything that we went through together and kind of taught each other And spoiler alert, not a happy ending. But yeah, it was a show I really wanted to do and kind of tell that story. Yeah.
Yeah. And you
she didn't give a shit about anyone. Have you ever volunteered?
Yes.
Bullshit. What?
I'm here.
Oh, look at that.
I'm here this evening on a voluntary basis. There you go.
But was the show partly about whether the reasons people volunteer for stuff, though, and whether you're doing it for good reasons, well, selfish reasons?
Oh, absolutely. Like, I'm not that kind of smug. I acknowledge that, like, so the nicest thing about volunteering is telling people that you volunteer. I've recently gone vegan for exactly the same reasons. I'm actually a vegan now. But, like, yeah, there's loads of... Obviously, it's not a wholly selfless act. There are, you know, you do it to make yourself feel better about all the things that aren't right in the world. But, I mean, you can do the right thing for the wrong reason. I don't give a fucking shit as long as you're out there doing it.
Yeah.
And also, I'm honest about it, in that a lot of time it's shit. Because teenagers are boring, and they don't mention that in the training, but they are boring, awful, selfish, horrible people. But do go and give you time.
And you've been recording with Go Faster Stripe.
Yes.
Who are filming us right now, again.
Oh, very
been
good.
Filming all weekend with you.
Yes, but sick of me by now. I mean, I'm sick of myself. Why would they?
So your show was Her Majesty.
Her Majesty. That was my show from Edinburgh last year. And that was the last time I was doing it on, when did I film it? Saturday?
Yeah.
In Cardiff. And I'd not actually done it for 2 months.
Yes.
So I had that sort of, oh shit, I don't know this. And a real panic. But it went great. Good for me.
It is. Well, that is an interesting phenomenon with I you know, you find that with touring. You do Edinburgh and you might have a couple of months off, and then if you, especially as I get older, my memory used to be really great, but then I'll be driving to a gig thinking I haven't even gone through it, and then going, oh my God. But mainly it comes back, right? Mainly it sort of comes out.
Yeah.
But sometimes you have to listen to it a couple of times before you listen to it and thinking, I don't remember doing it.
Yeah, that's it. And I mean, the last time I actually did it, that I thought was going to be the last time, was at the Women in Comedy Festival, which is in Manchester. And that was, I think, was it October?
October, that happens, yeah.
Actually, so it was longer that I'd not done it for. And because it was the last time I was doing it, I did it drunk. It was a very different show. Very different. I mean, I found it a lot funnier. I don't think the audience were that enamoured with it. So that was the last time I thought I was going to do it. And then I'd sort of... Because when I've done a show, and I know it, I sort of... When I'm done with it, I'm done with it. And I don't ever, I think, well, I've had what I want from it. I don't want it. I want to think about something else now. But then when I got asked to do it, I was like, oh, right.
I think it's, you know, for me, and it's really through Go Faster Stripe for me, I wasn't getting, and none of my shows were getting recorded. You'd do them and they'd go. Mm-hmm. And you think, oh, good, I'm glad it's gone.
Yeah.
But then certainly as time passes by, you kind of go, oh, God, I'm so glad we actually ended up doing those.
Because
certainly the early shows I did would be completely lost and I wouldn't remember any of it at all. And it's so nice just to have them existing. So I think you'll be very glad you've done it. They do a fantastic job as well, obviously. Mm-hmm. So the show's about your family, is it? Is that it's about not having strong...
Yeah. Oh, it's about having... All the women in my family are legends, right? And they make me feel like a failure. So it's about having really strong female role models and feeling like you can't really live up to their standards and the things that they've done. And then also about how I'm obsessed with male rock stars as well. And how I find that I think they're the only people in society, really, who can be themselves and nobody asks any questions and bad behaviour is accepted from them. Not that I behave badly all the time. And I think it was about as well sort of the pressures on women and stuff and sort of the perceptions, like sort of, because I think there's a lot of pressure still, obviously there are a lot of pressure still on women to be a certain way, and sort of the way women are portrayed on television and particularly in adverts, because like I do a whole bit about women in Malteser adverts. Can't stand them. The women in Diet Coke adverts wouldn't hang around with the Malteser advert women. That's how bad they are. So there's a whole load of stuff about that and how there's no real variety in sort of women on television, really, I don't think, or in advertising. I think there's still a lack of authenticity. So, yeah, it's a great laugh. Really sold that, didn't I? And there's some dick jokes in there. We can all enjoy that. Good. I bored myself then.
It's so difficult to talk about your own stuff.
Yeah.
I should have made you talk about each other's stuff. That should have been the way
we've not seen it. We haven't seen each other's show. That's bad, isn't it?
I should ask you about what you imagine the other show will be like.
Oh, yeah,
that would
be fucking chick shit.
Women, something like that.
But then, you know, all those things you're saying, I think, again, but it's the interesting that you're going back to creating your own stuff, and you know, then you're in charge. The having that autonomy, which is both through stand-up and podcasts, and so you know that those gatekeepers for TV and radio are there for a lot of people. It's very difficult to get through those gates for lots of people. And I think it's interesting what you say. I know that Janie Godley, who we've had on, talks a lot about the, you know, there's no working class Scottish voices, you know, in female voices in TV in the same way you see it. And I think there is that kind of, and she's a brilliant comedian and doesn't get the work she deserves to get, I think, and also has been going for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's also true of many male comedians, I have to say, as well.
Yeah.
But you know, that is... That it's interesting that you just can... Now can take that metal and get on with it yourself.
Yep.
But yeah, you're into Oasis, I know, and you met Noel Noel Gallagher, did you recently?
Oh, yes, finally someone else has asked me. Yeah, I met Noel Gallagher.
No, it's not possible.
It was possible and it happened. Oh, it was amazing.
He's small enough to model sofas as well, isn't he?
He's tiny. Yeah, he's absolutely tiny. He's only about, I'd say, about 5'9".
Yeah, tiny.
Yeah. yes, it was, I mean, what a day that was for me, because I saw you after it, didn't you? And I wasn't very coherent.
You were swaggering around the place in the park, is what you were doing.
That is exactly what I was doing. But he was lovely. You'll be pleased to know.
Oh, yeah, edge of their seats, mate. Don't give a shit. Gives a shit what a fucking millionaire behaves like.
And I quite like, Kerry, you were talking about, you obviously write and direct a sketch group, the Geen's Family Gift Shop, we were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
But you don't want to perform in it, and you've made a kind of conscious decision not to perform. Is that right?
Yeah. Because I've never really wanted to do... So the reason why I do stand-up and comedy is because when I was growing up, I saw The League of Gentlemen, and I was like, oh, holy shit, it just felt like someone had made something for me. And I was so excited by it. And then I sort of like forensically studied what they did. And I was like, okay, they met in university, so I should go to university because that's where I'll meet people to work with. And I, as soon as I sort of found... I knew I wanted to do comedy, but not really what. And then as soon as I started doing comedy, and and we sort of half put this sketch group together, I just knew it was never...
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
To perform, because I also like... I was doing stand-up by that point, and all the performance needs I felt like I had were being fulfilled. So this is something I thought I could, you know, be a different sort of gross phrase coming up, creative challenge. And I just wanted to really get stuck into with them to be a sort of a puppet master that you don't see. I guess the Jeremy Dyson bit, but Yeah, it's never been... I'm really, really bad at acting as well. And unlike a lot of stand-ups, I don't kid myself that I'm good at it. So, like, the only time I act in something is when they say, you can't write this unless you have to act in it. Right. So I did something today where I'd written a thing and they were like, you have to be in it. And I did, like, a Halloween thing for Sky, like a little short, and they were like, you have to be in it. And then I tried to write myself as a corpse that a conversation happens over, but they wouldn't let me do that. So the only time I'm ever in something is when they force me and I want to do the job, the writing job enough. But I love it. I love, like, it's such a different feeling from stand-up, which I also absolutely adore. But, like, you are in a gang and you kind of look after each other. And, yeah. And we're like, we've been through. We've had a lineup change and we've had a spicy few years with everything that's been going on. We've threatened to be sued a few times, just the three. It's been difficult, but it is like this kind of family kind of, we do, yeah, sort of look after each other. And it's nice because it feels like you share your victories. Because, I mean, you guys know this, that sometimes you have an absolutely blinding gig and then you've got to go and get on a fucking rail replacement bus from Preston home and you're like, but Noel Gallagher doesn't do this. And it just feels so, it can feel very lonely sometimes. But the lovely thing about Sketch Group is, like, when you die on your arse, you're doing it as a gang. Like, I feel, if I'm watching them struggle at a gig, which doesn't happen often, like, I am there with them.
Yeah.
But, like, obviously when they rip it as well, I get that elation. Like, I've just had a great gig. Yeah, I find it really satisfying.
Cool. And what's the musical? You're doing musical nights.
Oh, yeah, you should come and do it. Yeah, yeah. You'll do it.
You've asked me.
So that I love because basically I love musical theatre, but I'm dog shit at it. But I was like, why don't I make a show where I get to sing anyway? Because I found that loads of comedians, they love musicals or have at least one that they like. I think most people, even if you don't like musicals, have one that you like. So we do this show, like a live band where comedians who are like me, they've never been like good. You can't do it if you can sing well, because that's not the point. Like, no one wants to see, like, Rachel Paris is an amazing singer who does it in her act, so there's no kind of joy in singing her come on and smash a song. You got to pick people you think are shit, so thanks for doing it in June. So it has to be people who are, like, willing to put themselves out there and go, this is a thing that I don't normally do.
Yeah.
And, like, the vulnerability is gorgeous, because you're used to watching comedians be so self-assured and do this thing that they know that they can smash, and then just watching people just trying so hard at something they want to be good at, it's just delightful. And they make their own costumes and it's just so lovely. It's like the most joyous night. It just feels like a school play. It's got real Pride of Britain awards to it. Like, it's really like, love them. Like, you can't ever feel very uplifted by it.
Yeah.
And it's so nice to see these, you know, big characters get scared and just try really hard. And then the audience, like, sing along and cheer. And you can see them, like, growing in confidence. It's so lovely. It's a really fun night.
Did I see, was it Brett Goldstein doing the Christmas Muppet?
He did the whole Muppet Christmas Carol in 6 minutes.
Wow.
And that's costume changes as well. Because he's not bothered about musicals, but he's obsessed with the Muppet Christmas Carol. And so we put on a Christmas show just so he could do it. And yeah, he had like chains and everything for the Marleys and then like talcum powder on his head. It was so good.
I was watching a Muppet Christmas Carol. We broke off to watch Brett Goldstein because we watch it every. My wife watches. I love that film anyway.
It's great.
I think it's an amazing film. But my wife's family watch it every year. We were watching it. I saw that come up, and I said, "We've got to watch this." So we were able to compare him to the real.
And how did
the
he real come?
It was impossible to tell the difference between him and Kermit. absolutely impossible.
He won because the thing is that we have like about I think usually about five acts, and then at the end. We make the audience cheer for their favourite, and the favourite wins some money for their chosen charity, and then they encore with their dream song, and then he was singing something from Jesus Christ Superstar, which wasn't as much of a banger, I'll be honest, and so he took a shirt off, and that did it for all of us, so there you go, if you win,
okay.
Bring out the big guns, and that's not a tit thing. They're lovely guns.
Mine's all down here. I look quite good up like this. It's all there, it's all just gone down there. Just never become content. That's David Frew's philosophy. That's why he's a thin man. all right, Mackenzie Crook was disappointed I didn't ask this question to him, and I should ask you because there's a sort of, it's nearly a serial killer question, isn't it? And I will ask you separately, but you can be in it together if you want. There's a little clue as to where we're going. If you had to be in a human centipede with two other people, you're in the middle. I'm assuming you know what the human centipede is.
I know who... I can know yours straight
away. So who would be in front and who would be behind?
I would have Noel Gallagher in front of me.
Yeah.
And Liam Gallagher behind me.
You'd shit in his mouth. I would have picked it the other way around.
No. That's the right way.
Oh, I was going to... My instant reaction was something really weird.
Okay, let's have that.
Well, I was going to be like, well, I love my mum and dad, but that's so fucking weird, isn't it? I'm Welsh as well, so I'm doing fuck all to rid the stereotype. Yeah, I think I'll have my dad shit in my mouth, actually. Oh, please don't watch this on YouTube, Dad. Who would I like to have shit in my mouth? That's the question you're asking, isn't it? Yeah.
Mm. Well, or, you know, who would you least not like? You know, so who would you least hate is what I'm trying to say.
Who do I think's got nice tasting shit? It would probably be someone
Mary
like...
Berry.
No, she's... Oh, I'll tell you afterwards. No, in case. It's the old one, is that?
The national treasure, Mary Berry.
Well,
yes.
Don't treasure her because
her shit tastes really bad. Apparently,
yeah.
That's what everyone says about her. Out of all the TV personalities, her shit tastes really. Someone's gone around and tasted all the shit of all the TV personalities.
I think
Gwyneth
Paltrow's shit would taste nice.
Yeah, probably.
So I don't think she'd believe some mad stuff, but she seems to like. I think she survives on like thoughts and leaves, and I feel like I could eat those.
Yeah.
So I'd have Gwyneth Paltrow shit in my mouth, and then whose mouth would I like to shit in?
No one's ever been quite as gleeful about this question.
I knew what you were thinking then, and you can't say that.
No,
can you?
No, can't. There's two, and I can't say either of them. Hers, because she knows too many secrets.
Okay.
Shit in your mouth, mate, so you can't spill any of my secrets.
I don't want to do the podcast anymore.
I feel the human centipede shows a paucity of ambition, is what I've been thinking. Why is there only three? If I did it, I'd try and get as many on as possible, and then so they, in the end, the last one just went where the first one.
Oh, so it's a,
so like a so circle.
A ring.
Yeah, yeah.
That's...
Is that possible?
I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it is.
And you just have to really feed up the first one. As you're going round, you keep feeding, so there's a good supply of poo to go through all of them.
Sure.
And then just... and then you connect the circle up. You know, and it takes something to beat the human centipede for tastelessness, but I think I've done it. Yeah. the human
like
ringworm or something it should be called.
I'd watch that.
Yeah.
I'd watch that.
It'd be good. I'll ask you a random emergency question from the emergency question app, which is downloadable for free on Android and Apple. But watch out, there's another one called Emergency Questions. They're trying to steal from us, but they're no good. Look out for the little orange hat. Have you ever been brainwashed?
You work in a Catholic school, so yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, I have done 100%. Yeah.
Did you? Were you religious as a child?
Nope. It was just the school close. My grandmother was sort of religious, but not in a mental way. She just liked the festivals, and
I think we all do.
Yeah, and then sort of I went to Catholic school all the way through. Some very strange incidents that happened, which I don't know. I suppose I can tell them, can't I?
Tell them about that school trip they took you on the other day. Not the other day, a while ago.
Yeah, I'm older than I look. We ended up going on I was probably about 14, and all the girls from my year were rounded up and put on coaches to go on a trip that nobody knew about. And it was a lovely afternoon, which we spent with some nuns watching videos of abortions.
How rough is that?
Yep. I went home to my mum and I said, I've just been to this thing and I don't think it was right. She went mad and complained to the school, which did no good because it was a Catholic school. and they do what the fuck they want, don't they, really? So, yeah, I've had attempted brainwashing, but it never worked.
That
never
sounds
worked.
Like the origin story of a serial killer, doesn't
it? Yeah, it does, actually, yeah.
And that was when...
Something clicked.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever been brainwashed, except, like, the usual way, but the bloody patriarchy. But, like, no, I don't think anything specific. Although, I'm rich, so I'm kind of like, you know... Be your own person. Don't buy into all that bullshit. But I used to obsessively read when I first went to university, like, you know, like Closer magazine and like all those horrible magazines that like, I was sexually assaulted by Peter Cheese, that kind of stuff. And I used to love all that. But I felt sad all the time and I didn't know why. And then I got so skint I couldn't afford them. And then I was like, my self-esteem is going through the roof. And I, even now, as with everything I know, is like, you know, like I would like to consider myself an empowered woman. Like, if I read one of those in a waiting room for five seconds, I want to go and make myself sick in the toilets and feel sad.
I had exactly the same thing that I used to read pretty much every women's magazine. In fact, there's a bit in my show, Her Majesty, about this. It's coming out on Go Faster Track. Thank you very much. And I stopped reading them, and I had exactly the same experience that I felt so much better.
Yeah.
So much better.
They're poison. They're horrible. So, yeah, that's the closest I've come.
Okay. What is the most mundane encounter you've had with a celebrity? I want to give you mine that I've wrote in the answer. Oh, God, it's gone. Damn, I can remember what it was, though. I met... The bloke who used to be on Hollyoaks and then was on Casualty, who I think is married in real life to Topsy and Tim's mum in Topsy and Tim. Think I'm right. I met him in a newsagent's in Balham, and he thought he knew me, but he didn't know me. He just recognised me off the telly. That was my most mundane. And then he went, oh, no, I've done that thing.
Oh, nothing.
What's your most mundane encounter with it? It's got to be mundane.
Yeah, because you just made mine sound quite showbiz.
Okay.
So I might have to think on mine. Because, yeah, you've made mine sound exciting.
I once met Alex James from Blur at an event for the Manchester Food Festival.
Oh, was he hawking his bullshit cheese?
Yeah.
Very, very 90s band, that, isn't
it? A few years ago, this was. And I used to like Blur as well as Oasis. And I was like, oh, it's Alex James from Blur. My friend said, oh, we'll go over and we'll start a conversation. Wish I hadn't. Tedious. I was like, oh, someone else has met him. Someone just went, yeah. I was like, oh, I'm a big fan of Blur and, you know, that. Yeah. Okay, and then he was like talking about the cheese.
That's cheese,
And where he now lives. And I was like, yeah, I'm just going to go and get a drink. Bye. And then just left.
So he was going, I don't want to talk about Blur because that's boring, but let's talk about cheese that's my current job.
Oh, yeah. He looked really sad as well. Like, I don't know.
Cause he was once in Blur milk. And now he's making cheese.
For a living.
Yeah.
Damon Albarn's written a fucking opera. Of course he's sad. I think I've got one.
Okay.
At the Leeds Festival, in whatever year it was, I met the cast of My Parents Are Alien.
Oh, yes.
And it was the shit mum. Because there was a good mum, and they swapped her for a shit mum. Didn't they? Do you remember that? There was a good mum who... She was on Alan Partridge.
I don't know what this program is.
What? My Parents Are Aliens?
No.
That is enough to tell you what the elevator pitch is.
Does anyone know what... Does anyone not know what
actually,
it is?
Actually, now I look back, it's a huge dereliction of care. So three children get taken out of the care system and put with people with, I'd say, borderline personality disorder who are aliens. And then they just sort of parent them very badly. And that's the shtick.
Do you have to smoke weed to watch this?
No, no, it's for children. So, yeah. So it's, yeah, it was when we were growing up. Maybe you're a little bit older than me, so you might have just missed it. I was probably too old to be watching it. I didn't have many friends. I met my parents were aliens, but I met the crap mum. The one I was going to say, but I think it might be too showbiz, is I was on a plane from Glasgow to Iceland. Wow, sounds exciting. And I saw... I thought I was quite good. And I saw Bez from the Happy Mondays. Oh, yeah. And I went up to him and went, excuse me, are you Bez? And he went... Yeah.
That's too good. That is too good. I've run a half marathon and a marathon with the father from My Parents Are Aliens, so
Oh, I'm telling him I'm sorry he had one shit wife.
Yeah. I think I went on a date with the shit, what you consider to be
really?
The shit.
Really? Really?
But we realised we were better off as friends because at the back of my mind, I knew that you wouldn't think she was as good as the previous.
Also, you've got those three kids to deal with out of the care system. You don't want to fuck around with that.
Very lovely. Hello, Carla. How are you doing? I'm sorry this lady was so rude about you. And also, sorry it didn't work out as a romantic partnership. We're better as friends. Would you rather have a clitoris in the crook between your thumb and finger or have a bionic nose? I mean, there's no question, is there?
What does bionic mean?
Nose means you can smell things really fast from a long way away.
Oh, bionic
clit hand.
Yeah.
No, I'll go for the nose. I'll take the beak, mate. I'll have
really?
That. Yeah.
You've already got a clitoris, haven't you? You're not thinking.
Yeah, but not there.
So, where
it's convenient.
I'd have been like this. Like, we're chatting.
There.
Yeah, there. Yeah.
I've got. Well, I wouldn't have it there because
playing snooker.
I've got.
Fucking brilliant. Your podcast would be a lot more interesting. Rarely makes a trick shot these days.
I've got a genuine sort of, what's the word? Slight phobia about that part of the hand.
Have you?
Yeah, it's very. Can you see? There's a vein.
What? You're afraid of it?
You see it throbbing.
No.
Can you not see it? Look, where?
I mean, that would be terrible.
Look,
terrible to be afraid of your part
no,
your of your own body.
Your hand's shaking.
Oh, there, not... look. There, that's the one.
Oh, yeah.
I've got a vein there that throbs, and it's just...
Well, that's a few nerve endings away from it.
We can rebuild you.
Yeah.
I don't want a bionic nose. I think, you know, when you... I mean, you're very lucky that you live here. It's great, blah, 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 but, like, London fucking stinks. And, like, I don't want to smell more of it. I don't want to smell more of nearly anything. Imagine all the lushes you could smell at one point.
Oh.
Constant nosebleeds from the stress of it and all the fucking bath bombs. No way. I'm a vegan as well. I decimate every toilet I go to. I don't want a fucking bionic nose. No way.
It's not a good question, but hey, what great answers. So we're all right. We're off. We'll go back to the podcast. Have any of the killers that you've spoken about on the podcast listened to the podcast? Because some of them are still alive, living.
Yeah, we think that there's a couple who would have sought it out. Yeah,
but would they be allowed to?
They let them do anything in prison now, Rachel. It's like a bloody holiday camp.
I don't think that they would be allowed to listen to stuff like that.
I do.
No.
Definitely.
No.
They've got PlayStations.
Yeah, but I bet they're not playing bloody Grand Theft Auto and picking up sex workers.
What do you think they're going to... Well, they're not fucking playing Tetris, are they? You don't need a PlayStation for that.
They'll be playing, I don't know, Crash Bandicoot.
simpler
and,
times.
And Sonic the Hedgehog.
Yeah, that's what they'll be playing.
That's
yeah, absolutely,
playing.
Sonic.
I think some maybe... I'm not sure. It's a bit weird. It's a weird question. It gives me the creeps slightly.
Serial killers, most of them are the kind of people who, again, comedians, Google themselves.
Yeah.
So I don't know if they would have access to that, but I think they would certainly have an interest. And if not, there'll be people who are writing to them who will say, so-and-so spoke to you, because they will search everything to do with them. I think they'll be aware. Some of them will be aware of our work. work. but I don't know if they... If they're allowed to listen, I think that some of them definitely would. Because I, for a while, went on a couple of, like, serial killer Facebook groups to mainly plug the podcast. And it's a spicy old world that... Like the stuff that was going on there, I was like, not for me.
Well, you joke about the podcast stopping you writing to people in prison, but there is this phenomenon of large. I think it's mainly women, isn't it, who write into serial killers. Occasionally married. I mean, occasionally married like criminals. Yeah. At least I don't know if the serial killers have successfully.
It's very. And we would never. And we said that as a joke. Obviously, we were not interested in anything like that. There's sort of this whole other side. Of people having an interest in serial killers and like watching a documentary and, you know, doing a podcast about them, to people who wear, there's like murderabilia, people wear t-shirts with serial killers on. I once, and I remember telling you this, years ago, I used to work in a rare books library in Manchester. I know, with my accent. and a woman walked in, and she had a tote bag with Myra Hindley on it.
Play the room, love.
Yeah. So there's that whole other side that we find really bizarre.
Yeah.
And like we never want anything to do with.
Yeah.
It's, and I think, yeah, that's the bit that I find very strange. I find it really strange. The only reason, I'm very hardline actually. I don't think, if you're in prison as a serial killer, I don't think you should be allowed communication from people who are writing to you as fans as such. I just don't see how that is a thing that happens.
I think it's, I mean, each to their own. I wouldn't do it, but I don't think you should. I think the art of letter writing is dying. I think. Well, no, I can, like, I don't think that people should be stopped from, because I believe in rehabilitation.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I do, absolutely.
But so I think they should be allowed to, you know,
but has any serial killer ever been rehabilitated?
We don't know. Well, there's a great one. Not great. There's an interesting one.
Jack
Unterweger. Yes, who's like this, was it German? So he was a serial killer who was incarcerated, and then he was very smart and eloquent. And so there was this huge sort of like intellectual movement to release him from prison, because I think he started writing in there, and people were like, listen, this is people can be rehabilitated. So he got let out, became sort of a celebrity, was in high society, was writing these books.
Used to be on all sort of art shows and talk shows and things like that.
Yeah, sort of those round table things of you know, smart people. And then these murders started happening, and using a very similar MO to what he used to do. And then the police would come to him for advice on how to catch the guy. And he's like, I guess you just have to have your eyes open. Yeah, he started murdering again, and then has been put away now. So I believe in the idea of rehabilitation. I think I'm yet to see it, and I think some serial killers as well have said, oh, I shouldn't be allowed out. I'm safest here. I wouldn't. They're really on this Facebook group. They're really into writing to them.
Yeah.
So they were like, oh my god, I got a letter back from Dennis Nielsen, which is actually quite a big deal because he is quite a private man. But they like the royals. They were really sort of like, what should I say? What should I ask? And people like, he'll go cold on you if you ask about the crime. So you should talk about the Labour Party, and you should talk about these things. And yeah, they were really sort of into it. And that you could tell there was kind of like a frisson of like that was. Like, so it was how you would talk about, oh my god, that boy texted me back, and that I was like, it was, I felt really uncomfortable about it, because I think there is a sexual element there that, you know, someone more educated than me could explain away, but it is a weird thing.
I think we've been lucky that, I say, the majority of people that do listen to our podcast are not that side of the people that have an interest in serial killers.
Well, you're too flippant, probably, and you're not. I mean, you're taking it seriously, but you're not taking it seriously.
Yeah,
and so I think they. I would imagine those people would be annoyed by you for daring not to, you know, for not taking their heroes.
Exactly, because we think that they're pieces of shit.
Yeah.
Like that. Whereas I guess the people writing to them don't think that. I think sometimes there's a guy who I need another word than serially, regularly writes to serial killers and poses as different people to try and sort of like go, right, and he learns about a serial killer and goes, I think that they'll respond to a lonely woman in her 40s and will write to them to try and get them to chat. And it's to put himself at the centre of the case. It's another way of vicariously putting himself in the public eye in like some weird reflected glory that I think is equally fucking bizarre.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I suppose like there's an element where people, you know, you want, all of this industry comes from people wanting to understand what drives someone to do that.
Yeah.
There's a frisson, even if it's not a sexual thing, there's a frisson of fear, or, you know, it's an interesting thing. Whatever level you're entering into it on is still a little odd, but I get it. And I think as comedians, I think as well, you know, it's talking about subjects that you're not meant, it's the kind of subjects that comedians would talk about in backstage rooms. And if you get a group of doctors together, they would tell terrible stories in the back room of the hospital, you know. But as comedians, you know, you can push it. And I think in a way your podcast does that, you know, that, you know, there's I mean, even that we're talking about that plane, the suicide plane thing. Most comedians would have a joke about that, but wouldn't be able to do that joke anywhere, you know, or even an observation about it, because it's not really, you're not really joking about it. But it's, you know, that's the bit I think that connects comedy as well to it. You know, it's that fascination with the kind of the macabre and the not being able to comprehend it. You read these books in the hope that you'll somehow understand, but we're never. If you're not a psychopath, you're never going to understand what being a psychopath
is. The thing, like our listeners tend to be women and gays because we're the ones that get murdered. So I think we're the ones that are interested in, like, tend to be really interested in true crime. And like, I was speaking to someone about it the other day who's I think they're an academic that studies this kind of thing. They're like, women tend to be more into true crime or obsessed with true crime.
Women are the biggest buyers of true crime books. And magazines and things like that.
And it's because we're usually like it's sort of like a survival guide. That's how this academic was describing it to me. It was like, well, that's your thing. Like guys are like, well, I'd fight the guy and be like, no, I'd maybe hit him with my shoe and then I'd get murdered. Like, you know, like so finding out how and why these people work is sort of a self-preservation thing.
Sure. And do you think you've done 40 odd? Is it more 46 or something you've done?
Podcast,
not murders.
Yeah. what a 100th episode that's going to be, right?
Are you in danger of running out, or is it a never-ending?
Well, I usually say to that, as long as there's men in the world, we'll always have serial killers. but, I mean, because we have done so many episodes recently, we will never run out. There's always, because we do quite a lot of historical ones as well. But now we're thinking, we all say, who should we do? That's what we say, don't we, for the next episode. Who should we do next time? And we've done pretty much all the big ones.
We've still got some heavy hitters. We did a three-parter on Fred and Rose, and it was the most exhausting 3 weeks of my fucking life.
Over Christmas as well, it was.
Yeah, that was... It's just the way it fell. In fact, we released one on Christmas Day.
Yeah.
And you know, people would rather listen to that than fucking listen to their family for any longer. But yeah, I guess we have a lot of the big ones, like the Bundys, the ones that people have heard of, we've done. There's still a few.
Yeah.
But I get about every day... I know when a new serial killer has been found because my Twitter and Instagram and emails go fucking mental. When Ian Brady died, my phone wouldn't stop ringing. Yeah. Like, it was... I thought my dad had been injured, but everyone was like, Ian Brady's dead. Yeah. I'm like, good, I'm happy.
So you got messenger pinging, your WhatsApp was going. Yeah. I was like, what's going on? Oh, right, okay.
Everyone tells you, but also serial killers get found all the time. Mm-hmm. But we have to you have to be careful where you pick them as well, because China and Russia are very quiet. They shut that shit down. Mm. If there's a serial killer, you won't find much information about them because they like to pretend that that just doesn't happen in their country.
I think the shortest episode we ever did was a Chinese serial killer.
Oh, and it was me banging on about Chinese hymens for most of it.
Yeah, it was.
Do you know what those are?
You don't want to know.
I think it's fascinating, right? So what it is you can buy these, what are they called? So it's a fake hymen, and it
prosthetic.
Says... Yeah, but it's not a prosthetic. You whack it up there, and it's like, so you can hide your shame on your wedding night. All the language around it is gross, and then you whack it up there, and when it gets broken, some blood comes out, and then after, 20 minutes, it just disintegrates into you. Isn't that the fucking worst?
Well, I'm not sure it compares with the crimes of... Fred and Rosemary West.
That's true. But
not the worst thing we've talked about during this podcast, but it is unsavoury, yes. It's unpleasant, and a shame that people feel they have to worry about stuff.
I've just realised we never know what to do. People always ask us for merch. I think we should get branded ones of those.
Oh, gosh.
I would like a hymen with my face on it. That's why the ladies
so you
could
can
put
fuck
up there.
Yourself.
Just so that it's like a little branded Chinese hymen. My face. So no, the ladies are putting that up there. No, okay. You'd buy that, wouldn't you?
You're saying is you want your face smashed in by a dick, which is so weird.
That's what I do want. And a little bit of blood to come out.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh dear.
Gavin, people think our podcast is strange, isn't it?
So
Mackenzie Crook talked about all this though, didn't he?
I've just wet myself.
Oh no.
I am quite old. It was this bottle of water. I forgot it was down my expensive chair. Don't worry, it hasn't gone on my Wookiee book. That's what Russell Brand calls it. So, someone else said that on Twitter. A couple of people, thank you for those people for giving me my second joke of 2018. We're only 2 months in. This is not bad, or 3 months if you're listening at home. It's been really fascinating to chat with you and lovely to meet you both. I don't think I've properly met either of you before.
No.
Do listen to the podcast and go and catch the... Are you touring imminently? Are you doing Edinburgh?
Yeah. Well, we're actually here on Sunday, 3 o'clock.
Yeah. I think there's some tickets left.
Yeah, there's not many. There are a few tickets left for this Sunday at 3 o'clock. We use these chairs, actually.
Do you?
Time. Yeah, they let us have a go. They went, these are Richard Herring's chairs.
Can't allow that.
So we went like that.
only I'm allowed to spill on fluid on the... don't want you on them with your Chinese hymen.
I said when I sat on this, I went, this would be a terrible chair to come on in.
That's what
I
said. You did, actually.
Because it would leave a hell of a mark. Anyway.
So, yeah, we're here on Sunday. And then
Glasgow sold out. Cardiff, there's still some tickets for. That's in April.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, that's... Oh, and then I think we're going to do a couple in Edinburgh.
Yep.
And maybe a Christmas special here and then America, we think.
Going to crack America.
Ooh. Well, this is the thing. It's like, it's lush. It's so lovely. And we love everyone who listens. But like, America's like, these two British girls. and I don't think American women speak the way that we do. Not on anything that isn't like premium pay channel. So I think they're fascinated with the idea of what we are. America was where most people started listening to us first.
Yep.
So yeah, I think we're going to go and do some dates there. It's going to be so exciting, isn't it?
It's going to be great.
So exciting. Yeah.
It's so brilliant. It's such a brilliant, that you've created this out of, and done it all yourselves, and it's so successful. So give a massive round of applause to my guests, Kiri and Rachel, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you.
Listening to Returning to Death Square, the podcast with me, Rich Herring, and my guests, Rachel Fairbairn and Kiri Pritchard-McLean. The music is by Pess. The other stuff that I need to remember is to thank everyone at the Death Square Theatre, thank everyone at Go Past the Stripe, especially Chris Evans, not that one. Thank you to everyone at the British Comedy Guide, Ian Tunes, Ewan Chu, all those guys. Thanks to you for listening. You're the most important. Without you, it's hardly a show. And thanks to my producer, Ben Walker, that's his name. And thank you also to me, Terring, for coming up with this idea all on my own and then doing it. It's a Sky Potato, Go Fast the Stripe, and Fuzz Production. And goodbye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Thanks for listening. Go to GoFasterStripe.com for all your Richard Herring download and book needs. Go to RichardHerring.com/gigs to find out if Can I Have My Ball Back is coming near to you. And please listen to as many podcasts on this feed as you possibly can, and make your family and friends and children and strangers, make them listen too. Do get consent from everyone before you make them listen, though. All right, thanks for listening. Go and listen to another one. Bye-bye.